It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 128 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray.
We are coming back from a week-long hiatus post-Gen Con. I needed a little bit of a break. It was a really busy week at Gen Con. We saw a lot of Star Wars and specifically X-Wing related news dropped at the convention, so we're going to talk about that today.
Yeah, and you were able to get your hands on some second edition stuff. And play a few games. So I think we'll also cover that, because I'm certainly interested.
And on top of all of that, Fantasy Flight has detailed some new information about the 2019 X-Wing World Championships. So we're going to cover all these things in today's episode, so we should probably get into it.
All right, Tim, you are a representative at Gen Con. What do you have to report?
Well, I'm not a great reporter because I wasn't able to attend the in-flight report that Fantasy Flight put on, but I was watching the live stream like I'm sure a lot of you were. And obviously the biggest piece of X-Wing news we got out of that is that the Clone Wars era stuff is coming to X-Wing.
Yeah, I mean, we know there's some more general interest in the Clone Wars era, just with Star Wars in general, with the Clone Wars cartoon show being continued. I personally am not the biggest fan of the Clone Wars era ships. But at this point, I mean, they already have most of the ships in the original movies all out, so you got to get more ships somewhere.
And see, I fall on the complete opposite side of that, Carson, where I love the ship designs from the prequel era stuff. So I'm actually just really excited for the potential that we're going to get that Naboo Starfighter in the game, potentially, if we're going to get any kind of prequel era content coming out. Fantasy Flight specifically announced that they're going to be bringing Clone Wars era content to both X-Wing and their Legion miniatures game, and that there will be two new factions introduced into X-Wing along with this Clone Wars era content. So presumably, I guess we can assume at this point it's going to be something like the Republic and the Separatist Army, something along those lines. But that'll bring the faction total for X-Wing up to a whopping 7 factions, which is quite a big increase over the first edition of the game where we only ever saw 3 actual factions.
All right, let me just clarify. I like the Naboo Starfighter. I just don't like the droid ships that much. But I do think 2 new factions is really interesting. I mean, we saw the break between Rebels and Resistance and the Empire and the First Order, separating those out into their own individual factions. And I think, you know, more factions, just as far as game design, having those more restrictions on your list building, not being able to blend First Order and Imperial stuff or Republic era stuff with the Rebels, I think will provide good list building restrictions that I think should make for a healthier game.
Well, and I think the health of the game will also be affected by the fact that upgrades can be designed for these more narrow factions, where in first edition, that's something where we saw where if something was available on a Rebel ship, it was probably available on most Rebel ships. So being able to narrow that focus down to just a much smaller subset of ships for each faction, I think will give the designers of X-Wing a greater opportunity to make more interesting abilities without fear that they're going to break other existing ships that are out there. You have a much smaller pool of ships you're designing for within each faction, so you can make some really cool faction-specific cards.
Yeah, and we've seen so far the Jedi Starfighter for the Republic, and we've seen the Sith Infiltrator Darth Maul ship for the Separatists. And both of these, I think, are great first choices. I mean, that Jedi Starfighter, basically pre-A-Wing, which is a great ship. And so I'm excited to have some Force users in my A-Wings. Hopefully we get some generic Initiative 1 Padawans or something, kind of like what they've done with the TIE Advanced prototype, having some generic Inquisitors. And then, of course, we also have the Sith Infiltrator, which I think comes along with the assumption that there will be some Force users in there. And that ship looks pretty good on a medium base.
And there are a lot of ship potential from the prequel era. I'm excited to see. Maybe we'll get a reskin of the Slave One for a Jango Fett era ship. We could see an ARC fighter, but more in its heyday and not in kind of like the thrown together Rebel Alliance configuration that we've seen in the current edition of the game. So it's going to be really interesting to have just not only those 7 factions, but a whole new era of ships to pull from. So I'm actually really excited for this announcement. We don't have too many details yet, but hopefully we'll be seeing some stuff in the coming months. So this past week, Fantasy Flight dropped an article detailing some information about the upcoming or forthcoming 2019 X-Wing World Championships. We've known a little bit about this event for a while. It does appear it's going to be a standalone event just for X-Wing. And we found out now that it's going to coincide with the Coruscant Invitational events.
Yeah, so this is a really interesting choice by Fantasy Flight. Yeah, so the 2019 Coruscant Invitational will take place, and then the following day, the 2019 World Championships will begin, all happening, of course, at Roseville, Minnesota, at the Fantasy Flight Game Center.
And the big news about this is that the X-Wing World Championships are going to be invite-only. We already knew that the Coruscant Invitational obviously was going to be an invite-only event, but the World Championships now are going to also be invite-only, though with a slightly larger ability for players to access this event, with more events making you able to qualify for the World Championships.
All right, so before we go into how you qualify, Tim, what do you feel about this event, or these two events, becoming one super X-Wing weekend?
Well, from the player perspective, I think for players who are going to qualify, it looks likely right now if you qualify for the Coruscant Invitational, you're going to qualify for the World Championships. But that makes it a little bit easier, I think, like logistically for people who are going to be traveling for X-Wing to have them all consolidated into 1 week, where if you're going to come to the Coruscant Invitational, you can just stay the extra couple days and play at the World Championship. So from the logistic perspective, if you're a player participating in both, I think it makes a lot of sense. It is weird to me that they opted to make both of these events qualify only. So we had talked previously right around the time when the FFG was talking about the World's Lottery and seeing the aftermath of that for the last first edition Worlds. There's a lot of negative feedback coming from that event where there was this lottery, players couldn't get in, a lot of people who had gone to every other Worlds weren't able to get into an event, a lot of great players weren't able to get into the World Championships. Now we've basically seen a swing from one extreme to the other from Fantasy Flight, where before it was basically either a click off trying to register for an event before tickets ran out. Then they switched to that lottery system where it was mostly random. They saved a few spots for top 16 and previous World Championship winners. And now they've switched to the other extreme where the only way you can play at the World Championship is if you qualify at another premier level event.
Yeah, I mean, and this qualification is pretty interesting. I mean, we've talked the past 2 years how we both weren't great fans of the current system that they had been using. And really, you know, they were presented with two choices: either switch to some sort of invitational system or switch the location to one that could hold the volume of people who were interested in a world championship. They've obviously chosen to keep it at Fantasy Flight headquarters where the game's made. I think, you know, the employees really enjoy taking that time each year to celebrate with the fans of the game. So they've chosen to keep it there, which means it does have to be invite only, which definitely does still hold the prestige of a world championship. I mean, you have to be pretty good to qualify for Worlds.
Yeah, Fantasy Flight detailed the four ways you're going to qualify for the world championship. You're going to finish top eight in one of their system open series events. There have been, I think, about 15 of those in the last System Open Series. So that would generate about 120 players who would qualify just for making those top eight finishes. They also introduced in this past System Open Series the System Open Hyperspace Qualifier, where basically, rather than going to cuts, you would play a series of Swiss rounds, and all players who were undefeated in those Swiss rounds would be able to qualify previously for the Coruscant Invitational. Now you'll qualify for the World Championship as well.
Yeah, I mean, so these are the two ways you also qualify for the Coruscant Invitational. Getting a top eight finish at a system open or going undefeated at one of those system opens hyperspace qualifier side events. So there, that's great that everyone who traveled out to Coruscant will also be able to attend Worlds. I mean, and we've seen that these system open qualifiers, the people who are getting the invites to Coruscant, this is definitely a great way to filter out really only the most elite of players. Usually those, you know, top 32 or, you know, when I attend 31 cuts are a great way to, you know, take a great sampling of all great players within those cuts. And then to make it down to just the top eight, you're really left with the best of the best. And so, yeah, definitely all of those people should be in Worlds. And, you know, it's a pretty tough run to go 6-0 is what it was at any hyperspace qualifier. those system opens are usually pretty big fields. So I feel pretty good about all of those people getting invites to Worlds.
So the thing that differentiates the qualification for going to the Coruscant Invitational versus Worlds, Worlds has a few more opportunities, these coming mainly in the form of Hyperspace Trials and Hyperspace Cups. So basically, Hyperspace Trials and Cups have replaced what we previously called a regional, and there are some variations that come along with that. So what we know so far about Hyperspace Trials is that stores wanting to run a Hyperspace Trial have to be able to accommodate a minimum of 64 players, so they're going to be reasonably large events. There's also now no limit on the number of Hyperspace Trials you could have within a region as long as stores can qualify to run these events. So previously for regionals, say in the United States, you're going to have one Minnesota regional, one Omaha regional, one California regional, etc. Now they've opened that up so that states can run multiple events so long as they have game stores that can accommodate enough players to run these high-level events.
Right. And so there's, you know, a bit of a kicker there. So by the time you're hearing this, it's already too late for your stores to apply for the first batch of Hyperspace Trials. But a store also needs to be able to hold a minimum of 64 players to host a Hyperspace Trial, which, you know, for some locations, not a big issue. A lot of regionals are larger than 64 players. But, I mean, you know, within the states, there's definitely some regions that, you know, there's not stores within those areas that can hold that many players. And I mean, there's not that many players in those regions. And so it is will be tougher for those players. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, 40, 50 player regionals throughout the U.S. And I think it would be unfortunate for those stores not to get Hyperspace Trials.
Yeah, I'm hoping this isn't the case, but it would be really sad if this actually ended up impacting stores that previously ran regionals. Now, since they're only able to accommodate 50 players or so, not being able to run these events. Obviously, stores have the potential to run the event in an auxiliary space or rent a space out, but that substantially increases the cost here. And I don't think these events are particularly profitable for stores. They draw a lot of attention to the store, but I don't think they're making a lot of money off the event per se, necessarily. So, I mean, it might be a little trickier for some stores, especially with those stores that aren't quite reaching up to that 64-player minimum. But at the same time, we might see stores make a greater effort to get into spaces that can accommodate more players. There's a lot of gaming conventions around the country, smaller ones, but that might have open available space. So that could be a consideration stores could use in order to try and find a way to host these events and still, you know, draw attention to their store and bolster the community, which is really the purpose of organized play, is to kind of, you know, enhance the experience of the game for players across the country and to draw attention to your local game store.
Now, the first batch of Hyperspace Trials will be taking place from March to June, and then there's going to be a second batch taking place from September to December, all of 2019. So there will be a lot of opportunities for stores to run one of these events in either of the two waves.
Yeah, you've basically got 2 4-month windows there. Stores are allowed to run only one Hyperspace Trial per year, so you can't run in both one in both periods, but you can coordinate with other stores to try and, you know, not draw too much attention away from each other. I think it is interesting these 4-month windows that we have for Hyperspace Trials seem to at least bookend Gen Con, which hosts the North American Championship every year. So that event won't be interrupted by, you know, effectively a regional season, Hyperspace Trial season. We also know there's something called the Hyperspace Cup, which is going to be a bigger version of a Hyperspace Trial, but we don't have any more details on that currently. But we do know that the top 2 players from each Hyperspace Cup will qualify for Worlds as opposed to just the winner of a Hyperspace Trial.
Right, and we do know that the Hyperspace Cup will have a prize support more similar to a national championship. So I think you can expect more players to travel from out of state to these Hyperspace Cups. Those are going to be more like your 100-person events, 100-plus person events. So your really large regionals, whereas your Hyperspace Trials are going to be more your normal small size regionals, although they still could get pretty big. In theory, there will be enough of these that a lot of people won't be traveling too far to attend them, which as a player, I think that's nice if I don't have to travel as far to attend. But I will be, I think, attending a lot of these to make sure I get a chance to qualify for Worlds.
Yeah, so we have 4 different ways you can qualify for World Championships. Top 8 finish at System Open, undefeated in a Hyperspace qualifier, or you can win a Hyperspace Trial or get top 2 in a Hyperspace Cup. And I like this new structure. I like the emphasis on the competitive play. It does have some good things going for it, and it does have some bad things going for it. Right off the gate, I think this is better than the system that we previously had.
Right. I mean, so people who won regionals were given a spot at Worlds previously, but now, hopefully, it seems like we're going to have a much greater frequency of regional tournaments, which means that will extend to a lot more players being able to qualify.
Yeah, there are geographic limitations. So even if you had a regional in your state, not every state necessarily did, it might be really far from where you live. So hopefully the increased frequency of these regional level events will mean that they'll be closer to different player groups. So you won't have to travel as far if you want to compete and try and qualify for the World Championship. And I do really like the emphasis on exceptional performance being a means to qualify for Worlds. Whereas, you know, in the last World cycle, there were a lot of really good players who just didn't have strong, you know, regional seasons, weren't able to win those events, and suddenly they weren't going to be able to play at Worlds, even though they were of the caliber you'd expect to see for the greatest X-Wing players out there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it would be an easy feat to go to Worlds year after year. I think each time you make it, that'll be quite an achievement.
I do have some gripes, I think, with this new system. Overall, I think it's a really good move in the right direction, and I think it's going to make for a better competitive game in X-Wing. I do think there are some issues that probably should be addressed in some capacity. I've seen some chatter, too, from people outside of the United States or areas that get a lot of organized play support. There are a lot of countries that just currently don't get any organized play support for X-Wing. And with the old system where you could just either try to register or enter the lottery, if you wanted to come play at Worlds, you had that opportunity available to you. Now, if your country doesn't have organized play support, you're either not going to have any means to qualify for the World Championships, or you're going to have to travel outside of your country and play at events in other countries, which can get costly over time, especially if only the top player from these hyperspace trials is going to qualify.
Absolutely. I mean, in all levels of organized play, certain locations are going to have it much easier to attend than others. And this, of course, gets expanded at the higher levels. You know, if you have to travel out of country to attend a regional or system open to have a shot to be able to attend Worlds, well, that's going to be a pretty costly endeavor. But, you know, conversely, we have seen a trend. I mean, Fantasy Flight hasn't been great at their international spread, but we have seen a trend in improvement. We've seen more system opens take place overseas. And, you know, if there's more regionals happening, then countries that have regionals but don't have system opens, well, then they'll have more chances to qualify to Worlds, which I think is some steps in the right direction there. But it does still depend on if you're going to have any of those events in your country. But I get it. I mean, I have to drive 2 hours to go to a store championship, which, of course, I'll happily do.
Yeah. So there's going to be limitations based on where you live anyway. Like you're saying, though, Carson, I do agree. It has been getting better. We've seen increased number of system open events, and we're starting to see things spread throughout the country. And that can only get better as the game expands. So we're seeing the launch of second edition coming up here in September, officially worldwide. And that means that we'll get more attention on the game, and the more popular the game gets, the more incentive there is for Fantasy Flight and their organized play team to have even more of these events occur and support even more of these events. So really, I'm hoping we do have a really successful season going into the 2019 Worlds, because that can only mean that things will get bigger from there, especially for a game with this much hype and anticipation. I think there's a good chance that if we have a strong, really strong first tournament season, that'll just expand the following season.
And this seems like it's going to be an X-Wing only week, which I think is a great improvement to previous Worlds. You know, as cool as the Superstar Destroyer is in Armada, they take up a lot of table space, and I would much rather have more X-Wing side events. So I'm glad that X-Wing seems to be separating itself for its World Championships, and I think it'll be really cool. I mean, only the best of the best are going to be able to qualify, but I mean, if I'm not able to attend, watching that, I think is going to be really amazing. You know, first seeing the alternate format of the Coruscant Invitational, and then whatever the normal format is for the World Championship, I think will be pretty exciting. All of those games will look like top table matches.
Honestly, more than anything, hearing this news just makes me really excited for the next big tournament season. I'm really excited for these hyperspace trials, and I'm really excited to try my best and qualify for that World Championship.
Okay, Tim, so the part I really want to know about you've got your hands on all the second edition content. You've played a few games. You even streamed some of the games on Facebook, which was really cool to watch. What were your thoughts?
Well, first off, if you guys want to check out that stream, it should still be hosted up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/radioTCX, so you can see me face off against local player Andy Myers. I'm rocking out some Imperial nonsense against his scum nonsense. It was a really fun game, and it was actually fun to do a more table talk format, so definitely check that out. We're hoping to run more casual streams like that in the very near future. Talking about games, though, I've only had the chance since Gen Con to play two games of 2nd Edition. First up, I tried some threat cards, faced off against my friend Vic Yang, and then we played that live stream game on Facebook where we were actually running 200-point squads. I think the first thing I want to point out is that the threat card stuff is actually really fun. So if you're not sure how to build lists right out the box or what's going to be good or not, I'd recommend just trying out those threat cards. They don't actually come in the conversion kits, but on Fantasy Flight's website, they have full lists of what the threat cards are. So the actual Wave 1 blisters have the real threat cards, but if you want the actual content, just check out Fantasy Flight's website. And that's a great way to just get a feel for ships right out the gate. So I can see why they included these in the packages. And I think there's honestly a lot of opportunities with these threat cards. I know Fantasy Flight's already produced threat card alt arts. They gave some out at the Gen Con event where you had a Y-Wing and a TIE Fighter that had a different loadout than came on the actual official threat card.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Yeah, isn't that cool? But the actual game I played, I faced off with Boba Fett loaded out on his threat card with a whole bunch of stuff, Lone Wolf, the Slave One title, a bunch of cool things, and then two of those Skull Squadron veteran Fang fighters with just Fearlessness. And right away, these ships feel really fun, really different, really interesting. Boba Fett now being a medium base instead of a large base completely changes the way the ship feels. It feels much more of a dogfighting kind of jousting ship than it did before, where it was kind of still a big lumbering ship. And this feels more in line thematically with what I'd expect from the Slave One. And Boba's still got that awesome scum and villainy ability. You can reroll a number of attack dice for the number of ships at range one of you, which is really cool. And there's not a lot of modification in second edition. It's a lot harder to get. So getting those rerolls was vital. And those Skull Squadron fangs are just awesome. Like Fearless, it's letting me, when I'm in my opponent's arc and they're in mine, I can change a result to a hit. That was really valuable because, again, there's not a lot of ways to get modification in this game. So having those kind of persistent modifications, either from Fearless or the Concordia face-off ship ability, made these ships really fun and aggressive to fly.
I really do like that Fang threat card with just the Fearlessness. When I've been list building with the Fang fighters, the only upgrade I've put on them is Fearless. So I think that's cool to have that ready to go.
Well, and just that even that Concordia face-off ability is amazing, where if you're in your opponent's firing arc at range one, you can just change an evade die to an evade. It's fantastic. Now, it's not as good as the old abilities per se, where you could actually add results, but this one doesn't have the requirement of like the Conquered Dawn Protector title from first edition, where it again had to be you're in their arc, I'm in your arc. You could just do the I'm only in their arc, and I still get that defensive modification, which came up a number of times when I was playing against Vic.
All right, now I do have a question about the fire spray. With that medium base, how does the repositioning boost action feel, or using abilities like that Slave One title to adjust your movements? How does that medium base feel when you're trying to dodge arcs?
I will say it shakes up the math a little bit, and I think this is something a lot of first edition X-Wing players are going to have to get used to in second edition, where since it's kind of the half size in between a large base and a small base, that does change the rate at which it moves forward. I didn't notice it so much in the context of Boba, because Boba was usually not flying in formation, but I think it is going to impact when you're flying medium bases kind of in formation with smaller large base ships. You're going to have to get used to the rate at
which
they
move. Like a U-Wing?
Yeah, exactly. So you're going to have to get used to the rate at which they move, where if you take, you know, previously if you had a small base and a large base, you could take a one forward on the large base, which would move it so far, and then you could, you know, kind of do the equivalent move by using a longer template with your small base ship. Well, with the medium base, you can't really do that. They're always going to be slightly askew, so you can only really line them up every other turn, like a one forward, then a two forward, then a one forward, until you get things all lined up. So that's something to get used to. But with regards to Boba, it felt great because that's really kind of a standalone ship, isn't meant to be flown in formation. And I think generally with ships that aren't meant to be flown in formation, like aggressors in Scum, those ships are not really meant to be flown in formation, or they're meant to be flown with another medium base. It's going to feel all right. It just will take more time when you're flying in formation with those medium bases. But it feels great. Like a boost on the medium base feels right for Boba. Where you can, you know, reposition that forward or rear arc to try and get shots or arc dodge. Felt really good, and I'm glad that's an addition they made to second edition.
Yeah, I'm really excited to try out those medium bases. I think there's a lot of learning to do, but I think it'll be a lot of fun. So then you also did a points game where you flew a list that I'm very disappointed in.
Okay, well, I'll describe the list, and then you can tell me why you're disappointed. I flew the Grand Inquisitor, which is now basically what we call the Inquisitor from first edition, along with four TIE fighters, which were Hal Runner, Delmico, Gideon Hask, and Sain Marana.
Well, so I think you know, it's right in those TIE fighters there. You had four TIE fighters, three of which were the Initiative 4 Inferno Squadron members. And then instead of, you know, completing Inferno Squadron, you went with throwing in Hal Runner.
Okay, so yes, I did choose
I know
Hal
she's
Runner.
Good. But
no, Hal Runner's amazing, especially in second edition. I chose Hal Runner over Aiden Versio. There's a good reason for that, though. I got a better synergy, I felt like, out of Hal Runner than I would with Aiden. Aiden's got that really cool, you can cancel one attack, but you spend your only charge to do it. Hal Runner's got a persistent ability, though. Friendly ships, including Hal Runner at range 1 to 0, can reroll one attack die on a primary attack, which was really powerful when you're flying a little TIE swarm like this. I can understand your disappointment, though, because I only ran Inferno Squadron 2, 3, and 4. Didn't include Inferno 1 in there.
Other than that, I think this was a pretty cool list. You had a small TIE Swarm and then a budget ace in the Grand Inquisitor.
Yeah, and the Inquisitor is really affordable here. I'm going to tend to also call this the Inquisitor rather than the Grand Inquisitor because I'm just so used to that, but I'll try my best. But yeah,
the is important. You know, we have generic Inquisitors, but there's one the Inquisitor.
Yeah, so the Grand Inquisitor comes in at, I think, 58 points, which if you do that X-Wing First Edition math on its own is a little bit cheaper than you'd get with like your fully loaded out Inquisitor at old school 31 points, whatever. I did really want to try the Grand Inquisitor, though, in second edition, because you've got a similar ability. This time you can spend a force charge, of which the Grand Inquisitor has two, to add a range one bonus when you're attacking at range two or three. So basically, it's the same kind of thing you'd do in first edition. Basically, get three attack dice even at range two and three. There are some differences here, though. So the Grand Inquisitor in second edition, if you're attacking at range three, the defender will still get that range bonus. So they'll actually roll an extra defense die, which didn't happen in first edition. And now in second edition, the Grand Inquisitor has a second ability where when you're being attacked at range one, you can spend a force charge to cancel your opponent's range one bonus, which is actually really cool. So I wasn't counting on this part of the ability until I got to see it in action.
Yeah, I mean, and you don't have as many, you know, green tokens. You don't have the evade token to defend yourself. So, you know, having that in pilot ability to spend your force charge to reduce those four dice attacks down to three, I think is pretty helpful.
Yeah, and it saved me a couple times where, like, I was going to probably take a substantial amount of damage from three attack dice modified. If I only have a focus token or no token at all, which is not that uncommon, you're going to take some serious damage. And the Grand Inquisitor only has four hit points. So being able to cancel that range bonus was awesome. Being able to get that extra attack die at range was really awesome because that jump between two and three attack dice is huge in X-Wing. And, you know, that those force charges, we've talked about this before, but they are really powerful. You know, you're paying a premium for ships that have a force charge. Oftentimes they're more expensive than equivalent ships that have higher initiatives. But if you got that force charge, you're going to pay more points. But having that basically built-in action economy is really important in second edition so far, it seems like.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's the reason the force users always cost more. But even with the cost of the force powers, the Inquisitor is still pretty reasonably costed.
Yeah, and honestly, you could run the Grand Inquisitor as is at 58 points. I loaded him out with Fire Control System and Sense, the Force talent. But honestly, I think I only used Sensed once, and I never actually took a target lock. I don't think, or I might have taken one target lock, but I wasn't really using that Fire Control System ability. And, you know, he's still doing a substantial amount of damage and was a pretty potent threat to my opponent. So just as is with those built-in linked actions, Grand Inquisitor seems like a pretty solid choice.
And you seem pretty impressed with how the TIE fighters worked also.
Yeah, so this little TIE Swarm worked out great, and it felt great to run a little TIE Swarm again. Having Hal Runner on there, who basically, she has got the same ability she had in first edition, but it's a little bit better because it works on herself. Those friendly ships can reroll attack dice. That's huge when you're flying a TIE Swarm. And those Anthem-type effects, the more ships you have, you're getting a lot more value out of that. So having three other TIE fighters there to benefit from that felt awesome. The other, you know, the notable three named pilots I had here at initiative, four, Gideon Hask was a huge threat to my opponent. So Gideon gets to roll an extra attack die when the ship defending is damaged, so has at least one face-up or face-down damage card. That was clearly a huge threat to Andy, so Andy focused that down pretty quickly to try and get that threat off the board. It drew a lot of attention right away, which is nice because, you know, for a relatively inexpensive TIE fighter, I'd rather have my opponent shooting at my Gideon Hask and taking that threat off the board than focusing in on my Inquisitor and taking him off the board.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's great when your cheap TIE fighters are a threat that your opponent doesn't want to stay on the table, and they have to divert their firepower there versus your more expensive threats.
Well, in that combination with Hal Runner, too, where if Gideon's shooting at a damaged target, that's going to be probably three attack dice with probably a Hal Runner reroll and probably a focus token for an action, which is, in X-Wing 2nd Edition, those attacks are going to deal a decent amount of damage.
And then I really liked your Senn Morana build. Just having that marksmanship pilot talent makes that ship quite a workhorse for a pretty cheap amount of points.
Yeah, on its own, Sane's ability is a little bit unreliable. She can, when she's attacking, if you roll a crit result, you can cancel the crit and all your dice results and just deal a face down damage. That's on its own pretty unreliable, but she does have access to the talent slot, which means she can take marksmanship. Marksmanship lets you utilize that bullseye firing arc, and if the ship you're attacking is in that bullseye, you can change one of your hit results into a crit, which is awesome because then obviously you can combine that with Sane's ability and just cancel that crit right away and just deal a straight up face down damage.
Yeah, and so there you have a persistent source of damage that, you know, your opponent doesn't deal with early. Well, that damage is going to add up.
Well, and she works actually pretty good as a late game threat too, even against ships that have relatively high defense. This damage is basically guaranteed if you get him in that bullseye firing arc. You're probably pretty likely going to roll a hit, and you can then save your tokens defensively and just start dealing those damage one at a time from a relatively inexpensive ship.
Well, and what I think is cool is these aren't just, you know, your basic TIE fighters with crack shot. These are all named TIE fighters, you know, with a few upgrades, and you're able to also fit the Inquisitor in there. I think, you know, with that 200-point scale, you know, some upgrades are a lot cheaper. They can have really cheap upgrades, balancing it with the scale of cost of the pilots. That I think you're able to fit what feels like more full scale lists.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Yeah, and these ships all coming in at initiative 4, which is on the higher end of initiatives, or better, Hal Runner and the Grand Inquisitor both at initiative 5. Like, that's a pretty high initiative squad to be running. The TIE fighters are still TIE fighters, so 3 hit points, they're going to blow up eventually, especially since they don't have a great way to stack defensively. But when you're getting things like a pretty big offensive threat from Gideon Hask or Del Mico letting you reroll defensively if the enemy ship is damaged, there's a good chance that these ships will survive into the late game. And, you know, an initiative 4 in the late game with a barrel roll, if you're facing off against lower initiative ships, that's a pretty big threat even with just 2 attack dice.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think this is a really cool first look at 2nd edition. I think you need to do some more work, get some more games in, and continue to report back as the rest of us have to wait till September.
Yeah, and these are, you know, honestly, these are just first thoughts from my first couple games. But I have to say, completely sincerely, that I haven't been this excited about playing X-Wing since I probably first started playing X-Wing. Like, I honestly am looking forward to just my next opportunity to play any kind of game with whoever player. It doesn't matter where, it doesn't matter what list I'm running. I'm just really excited to try out all the new stuff that X-Wing 2nd Edition is bringing. All right, before we close out the show today, we always like to highlight any players, any Radio TCX listeners who have won a store championship. We still have a first edition store champion season going on right now. So, Carson, would you like to announce our most recent Radio TCX store championship winner?
Yeah, we want to congratulate Tom Strom, who won the Gaming Goat Egan store championship. He flew 4 X-Wings and a U-Wing to his store championship victory. So, congratulations, Tom Strom. And if you've won a store championship and want a shout out on the show, please let us know.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go on to facebook.com/RadioTCX and like our Facebook page. That'll also keep you up to date for if we do any more of those Facebook live streams of our second edition games. So be sure to be on the lookout for those.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy the show, please go on to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review along with a comment saying what you like about the podcast and why others would be interested in listening. Those reviews really do mean a lot to us, so we appreciate every time people take the time to leave us a review.
And if you want to support the show directly, please consider going on to patreon.com/radiotcx and becoming a supporter of the show today. It really means so much to us.
Again, guys, thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week.